island, free the souls. You have to go under the sea and drink with the old fisherman, who's like the devil. And if you drink him under the table, the souls go free. If he drinks you under the table, he keeps you forever in the cage, the soul cage. We don't really have any role models anymore in society. You know, there was a time when we could look up to politicians in the past. You know. Yeah. I can't name one politician now who I can look up to as a sort of worthy figure. They all seem like half men to me. You know, the most manly politician of the last years has been Mrs. Thatcher. Hello, my name is Sting, in the studio, God help us.
Gordon Sumner got the nickname Sting for his habit of wearing a yellow and black striped soccer sweater while playing jazz combos around the coal seaport city of Newport, England. The nickname would fit perfectly into the London punk musical movement that he would find himself in by 1978 as singer and chief songwriter of The Police, who went on to international fame and fortune with 5 studio albums in as many years. Then The Police called it a career at the top of their game in 1984 after touring on an award-winning multi-platinum album Synchronicity. Meanwhile, Sting, the eldest child of a milkman who later went on to own the dairy, and a hairdresser who taught her eldest classical piano, Sting embarked on a solo career that sought to frame his considerable pop songwriting and vocal talents with the evocative, fluid vocabulary of jazz music.
I think of myself essentially as a musician. That's what I started as, a musician. That's what I wanted to do, is to make a living as a musician. I was a bass player, and I backed cabaret, and I played in lounges, and I worked on boats. I did every kind of musical gig. I worked in theater. I backed comedians. So I look upon myself as a musician, and I want to be surrounded by musicians. You know, I don't want to be surrounded by a band of yes men. You know, say yes thing, whatever you say. I'm surrounded by people who have an amazing stature among musicians, and that pleases me immensely. So it's very much a democracy.
Sting scored immediately in 1985 with his song If You Love Somebody, Set Them Free, from his solo debut, The Dream of the Blue Turtles. One of the pleasant surprises of Sting's concerts back in the mid-80s was the inclusion of selected songs he had made famous with The Police. Sting knew his Grammy Award-winning songwriting success with The Police would attract considerable interest when he held open auditions in New York City, and he wasn't wrong, attracting jazz masters Kenny Kirkland on keyboards, Weather Report drummer Omar Hakim, and stellar saxophonist Branford Marsalis to be in his band for his first solo, the 1985 album The Dream of the Blue Turtles. Sting made it clear that this nucleus was formed because of their improvisational abilities, not in spite of them.
It's a small band, and I'm part of it. It's quite easy to shift the band around almost on the spot and from day to day. The show is different every day. We do different numbers every day.
Really?
The arrangements change nightly. It's so flexible, and it's just, you know, we have a beginning and an end. In the middle of most songs is kind of up for grabs, so that's where we get the spontaneity from. If we rehearsed a show that was, you know, note for note, perfect every night, we'd all of us get bored. All of us are improvisational players, so it's important that we keep that element in the music. And although it's not, we're not playing jazz, it has that feel. I'm really happy with the band. I agree. It's very exciting. Sometimes we fail. Sometimes we fail miserably, but that's good too.
Under the ruins of a walled city, crumbling towers and beams of yellow light, no flags of truce, no cries of pity. The siege guns have been pounding through the night. It took a day to build a city. We walked through its streets in the afternoon. As I returned across the fields I'd known, I recognized the walls that I'd once made. Had to stop in my tracks for fear of walking on the mines I laid. And if I built this fortress around your heart and circled you in trenches and barbed wire, then let me build a bridge, for I cannot fill the chasm. Let me set the battlements on fire. Then I went off to fight some battle that I'd invented inside my head. I waited so long for years and years. You probably thought or even wished that I was dead. While the armies all tattered flag we'd made, I had to stop my tracks for fear of walking on the mines I laid. And if I built this fortress around your heart and circled you in trenches and barbed wire, let me build a bridge, for I cannot.
But I like to keep a foot in the past, in a way. I think it's hard to move forward unless you've got a foot in the previous room. You know, I'm cautious like that. But you know, I like to move forward. I like to move on and be progressive, but I always like to look back. And I like doing old songs, and I like doing new songs. I wouldn't like to go and do a concert that was solely new material. And a lot of people go on stage and say, I'm not going to do any old material. And I think...
Actually, that was the... Excuse me for interrupting. That was the predominant, really, feeling among your peers, I'd say, through the 70s and most of the 80s.
But then again, human nature being what it is, audiences come and they want to hear what they know.
Sure.
You give them what they want. At the same time, you give them something extra. And then they're paying money. They should be entertained. I'm not there to pontificate.
It was Sting's incisive songwriting that took the Police quickly from post-punk to mass appeal. Take it from Police founder and drummer, Stuart Copeland.
And I didn't disagree with the things that he... The ideas that he expressed in his songs. We would disagree violently in prose. In fact, this is a classic classic thing, was where sitting around a coffee table arguing politics, I'd hammer him into the ground and leave him speechless. I mean, I'd have this reason what's fallacious about that and how this is misleading and how can you say this when that and all this stuff, and he wouldn't have any answers. He'd just sort of say, oh, well, he'd go away. The next day he'd come back with a song and he'd have a three-word line such as, Russians love their children too, which would flatten me, blow me out of the water.
In Europe and America, there's a growing feeling of hysteria, conditioned to respond to all the threats and the rhetorical speeches of the Soviets. Mr. Khrushchev said we will bury you. I don't subscribe to this point of view. Such an ignorant thing to do. If the Russians love their children too, how can I save my little boy from Oppenheimer's deadly toy? There isn't no monopoly of common sense.
written before the collapse of the Soviet Union while nuclear tensions were high because of instability in Eastern Europe. That's Russians, from Sting's first solo album, 1985, The Dream of the Blue Turtles. When we come back, Sting reveals his favorite pop songwriter and discusses with me emerging nations, parenthood, environmentalism, and the loss of both of his parents amidst international stardom. For this and your other favorite interviews, check out InTheStudio.net and follow In The Studio on Facebook. I'm Redbeard, In The Studio with Sting for the best of 25 years.
Welcome back. In The Studio, and I'm Sting with Redbeard, and he still has it.
Thank you, old friend. While the jazz flavorings may imply a certain musical sophistication, Sting points out how simple his arrangements remained.
Well, again, it's because we're a small band. It's like saying, well, what have I got here for a small band? I have a whole catalog of material that was tailor-made for an even smaller group, you know, just three people. There's a dynamism about that material that, it goes back to the Police, that sort of rocky, fundamental energy. And it was fun to come back and do songs. And there's hundreds of them. He pull out all kinds of songs every night, you know, some of which I barely remember.
Just yet, lesson was learned, it's so hard to forget. Still my beating heart, I've been taken for a fool. It's not healthy to run at this pace. Blood runs so red to my face. I've been to every single book I know, soothe the thoughts that plague me so. Sink like a stone that's been thrown in the ocean. My logic has drowned in a sea of emotion. Stop before you stop. Any help at hand. Sink like a stone. still my beating. Still my beating. Still my beating.
I don't really make definitive distinctions between any kinds of music. I mean, talk about rock music and jazz music as if they're some sort of, you know, different planet.
Right,
they're
right.
Not. They're labels that people find useful, particularly writers.
You're right. Very
so
good.
That they can, you know, nail an argument down. But frankly, as I said, we have this group. We're not really playing what would people would call pure jazz, but we have the feel of jazz, and the feel of jazz is freedom within certain limitations. And so I don't make any broad distinctions. I think music is music, and almost anything can be in it. Who makes the rules anyway?
My dear, I like my toast done on one side. You can hear it in my accent when I talk. I'm an Englishman in New York. You see me walking down Fifth Avenue, a walking cane here at my side.
Sting told me the inspiration for the title of his 1991 solo album, The Soul Cages.
It is an old folk tale, which I remember from being a very small child. Maybe my grandmother told me it. And I think it comes from, it's a kind of Nordic folk tale. You know, where I come from is the northeast of England, which was populated essentially by Scandinavian invasions. And so you'll find this myth in the British Isles and also in Norway and Denmark and Sweden to a certain extent, where the souls of the dead are kept under the sea by an old fisherman in lobster pots, lobster cages.
Ooh.
And to go and free the souls, you have to go under the sea and drink with the old fisherman, who's like the devil. You know? And if you drink him under the table, the souls go free. If he drinks you under the table, he keeps you forever in the cage, the soul cage.
Stars hang fire in the nets, in the chaos of cages where the crayfish lie. Where is the fisherman? Where is the goat? Where is the keeper in his carrying coat? A eclipse on the moon when the dark bird flies. Where is the child? We'll be right back.
I just remembered this old myth and decided that it was a good metaphor for what I was trying to write about in this album, you know, which was about death and, you know, trying to mythologize my relationship with my father, you know, sort of make it heroic, put it on a bigger scale. I wrote the song, The Soul Cages, but it's a very powerful phrase.
I mentioned that even though the hit song All This Time had sober lyrics alluding to the deaths of both of his parents, the buoyant melody and pop arrangement belied the serious subject matter, such as something Paul Simon would do. Here's Sting.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Paul Simon, you know, because if you're attempting to write literate or literary pop music, you have to a certain extent, tip your hat to the master, you know, and this man is the master. Believe me, he really knows what he's doing. I have to say I've been greatly influenced over the past 20 years by the work of Paul Simon. So it's no surprise to me when people say, oh, All This Time has a feeling of Paul Simon. In that ambiguity of lyric content and the sort of jovial nature of the music, again, there's something I learned from Paul Simon. I like that sense of irony.
Next was several forays into acting, including several movies and even a stage musical. But Sting's most lasting non-musical contribution may well be his high-profile, ongoing support of several socio-political causes, including Amnesty International, the Brazilian Rainforest Coalition, and environmental groups including Greenpeace. Sting first wrote One World, Not Three while still with the police, so I asked him, as we gazed out over a golf course, if he knew the first time that the term Third World was coined.
I think the United Nations, I don't know where it comes from, but it definitely gives the impression that it's something else, nothing to do with us, you know. First world, second world, and third world. Also, I don't like the word, what do they call? Oh, they call developing nations now. That's a strange one, because if all the nations in the world are considered to be developing nations, apart from the ones that are developed, like Western Europe and the United States, they're really in big trouble, because if everyone gets a car on this planet, there's going to be no air to breathe. It's kind of a weird thing. Okay, let's help these people develop to the extent where no one can breathe. I suppose, basically, it undermines the whole idea of everyone running around in these little golf carts. You know, we can't all live like this. There has to be some other method. And I'm not pretending to have any answers here. Third world, developing world. We need another global philosophy that really looks to the future, because we can't just keep capitalizing on our mistakes, keep using our mistakes as our advantage.
Everything I see,
walk free. Though all my kingdoms turn to sand and fall into the sea, I'm mad about you. I'm mad about you.
What's the insidious danger in that term and that point of view?
What, the third world idea, the developing nations idea?
Yeah.
Well, I'm quite hopeful, actually. As despondent as I sometimes sound, I think that kids now, and I have five kids now.
Five.
My kids are like militant about ecology. You know, they tidy up. They, if anything's not quite right, they fix it. I think kids are getting more and more informed about what's happening. And probably solve the problem. I hope they do. But we have to show them the way. You know, we have to open the door for them. Because if they don't solve the problem, then it's big trouble. Big trouble down the line. You know? I think what we face down the line is very serious. You know, epidemic diseases, starvation, weather changing. It's not nice.
Up next, Sting muses on maturity, fatherhood, and writing songs that people sing and whistle in elevators. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Sting for the best of 25 years.
Welcome back. In the studio, and I'm Sting with Redbeard, and he still has it.
Thank you, old friend. Even as Sting rose to international fame and considerable fortune, he had lost both his parents in rapid succession, and it had clearly affected Sting's lyrical focus and musical tone. Yet, amidst the loss, he had become a father five times over.
In what ways has fatherhood played a role in your socio-political activism?
Kind of forces you to mature. You know, maturing is a very painful business. Becoming an adult is very painful. You're not really encouraged to do it either, particularly in my business, particularly here in the West. You know, it's like we're perennially being tempted to stay children. You know, I keep looking at the golf course here. There's all these guys who are 45 years old riding around in Fred Flintstone cars, you know, hitting a little ball around. I mean, it's perfectly harmless, but it's kind of childish. So I think it's important that we grow up. And in a way, having kids jumpstarts you into growing up. It kind of shocks you. God, I'm responsible here. I've made this kid, so I have to try and fix things up a bit. It's a kind of nesting instinct, you know. It's like, okay, I've got to fix the nest. That's good. I really appreciate having kids. I love it. I don't know whether I'm a good father, but I'm trying to be.
Well, I think that's all the kids can ever ask of their parents, is that you care enough to try.
You failed, but you tried.
Down and time was the message she gave to me. Come down in time, I'll meet you halfway.
How has fatherhood affected your insights to your relationship with your father?
It's funny you should say that, because you find yourself at the worst of times sometimes becoming your father. The things you say to your kids when you're trying to, you know, sort a problem out, you say exactly the same stuff your father said. And you look at yourself in the mirror and occasionally you see him looking back at you, you know, and think, well, now I understand what he was saying, you know, now I understand the problems he was facing. Yeah, it's, you start to make that journey back. You know, I think it's a very natural odyssey that a person takes away from their parents. It's very, very natural to reject your parents, reject their values, where they came from, what they stood for, to move away, to explore on your own and say, okay, I've left that, and now I'm going to create a new world. Fine, that's great. And then as you reach the top of that curve, you know, you start to, things start to happen to you. You have your own kids, you know, you have to get a job and you have a certain amount of responsibility. You say, okay, now I'm going to make this journey back to my parents. I'm going to sort of, I understand. There's a big circle that goes on. Again, it's very natural and we should all be aware of it. And to a certain extent, I've gone back and viewed my upbringing and my childhood and my parents with a much more sympathetic eye than I had before, you know. I don't want to stay an angry young man all my life. I think, again, that's something we're encouraged to do as artists. You know, the angry young man, that's fashionable kind of vibe. You know? But you have to remember that you can get stuck in that. It's one thing to be an angry young man when you're 25. It's quite different when you're 40 to be an angry young man. And it's not so healthy.
You remember me when the west wind moves upon the field. Body. You forget the sun in his jealous sky as we walk in fields of gold. So she took her love for to gaze a while upon the fields of Bali. In his arms she fell as her hair came down among the fields of gold. Will you stay with me? Will you be my love among at the sun in his jealous sky as we lie in fields of gold. See the west wind move like a lover's soul upon the fields of Bali. Feel her body rise when you kiss her mouth among the fields of gold. I never made promises lightly, and there have been some that I've broken. But I swear in the days still left, you walk in fields of gold. You walk in fields of gold. Summer days among the fields of Bali. See the children run as the sun goes down among the fields of gold. You'll remember me when the west wind moves upon the fields of Bali. You can tell the sun in his jealous sky when we walked in fields of gold. When we walked in fields of gold. When we walked in fields of gold.
You said that two very important people had passed from your life for now. Your father is one. Who else?
Well, a lot of people have died in the past few years. Too many. I got really sick of the idea of death for a while. I was looking for my father died. I started to look for father figures. You know, it's going to replace the one I lost. You know, I spent a lot of time with Gil Evans, the arranger. Mm. In the last year of his life, I was fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with him. Sit, talk to him, learn from him, and talk about music. And, he became a kind of second father for me. And then I did a play on Broadway with a man called John Dexter, who was the director. He wasn't terribly old. He was about the same age as my father. It actually reminded me of my father a lot. He had the same kind of acid sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And he helped me a lot. I spent a lot of time talking to him about theater and acting and, you know, philosophy generally. And he died. People Aww. Kept dying on me. But, you know, again, the thing about death is it puts you on the front line and say, hey, forget it. You don't need a father figure anymore. You are the father figure. Right. I think it's important to process emotions. All emotions are valid, okay? Particularly ones to do with growing and maturing. But it's important that they're processed, and therefore you can move on. And the way I process my emotions is I have the tool of music or songs. That's how I process my emotions. So I think very deeply about subjects is to write a song about it for me. And so I hope I'm moving on. I hope I'm maturing. I don't want to stay in Peter Pan land. It's no fun, really. It's a nice feeling. It's a very confirming feeling, you know. I did a Saturday Night Live with Dana Carvey, and I'm standing in an elevator. I'm playing myself, you know. He gets in and starts to sing Roxanne. And, you know,
in a suit. Yeah.
A suit. And this this is not a sketch. This is my life. People do this all the time. They sing to me. And I think that's wonderful for a popular songwriter to have reached a lot of people unconsciously. It's something I wrote in the living room, you know, with a dog at my feet, you know. Just to amuse myself is now a song on that people can dredge from their memories and bring up. You know, it's there. It's in people's psyches. And I think that's great. I'm very privileged to be a songwriter. It's a great feeling. Don't let anybody tell you different.
You could say I lost my faith in science and progress.
Sting's 1993 album 10 Summoner's Tales, with a pun on his given surname, had the hit If I Ever Lose My Faith in You.